Hello, King Groyd. How you doing, man? What's up, man? Long time no see. Doing great. Good to hear from you on your day off.
Yeah, we were supposed to connect yesterday, but I fell asleep. So, but what's up?
Not much.
Hey, wait a second. Is that red?
You can wear red, Nick. It's not pure red. And at the time of the prophet, they were trying to make a distinction because the enemies were wearing all red. So you weren't supposed to dress like the enemies were wearing all red. But as long as it's mixed colors, if you have red and there's another color, it's okay.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. Just checking.
5 minutes, not even 30 seconds in, I'm getting haram policed.
I'm just kidding. It's okay. Yeah. I know. We like the color red.
I saw, did you see a clip from Klopp? He's like, I love seeing Nick and Stiko go back and forth. It's super funny. You know, there's been lots of clips. And I appreciate you taking this call because Osmongold, for example, he said a couple days ago he'd consider talking to me and just communicating through clips. I think when you have disagreements with somebody, we have a lot of more agreements than disagreements, I think. So maybe it's important to talk about this stuff. And so I appreciate you taking the time to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. The back and forth is a little, it's kind of funny because we're just clip farming each other on each other's streams. So we might as well just do it, you know, just sit down and do it.
Yeah, so let's start with some of the points of contention, right? We agree that Goyim should unite, but there are some, you know, you tweeted 2 days ago saying liberal, you know. And my point of view is that it's not really about left and right. You know, I do want to work with you and not have J.D. Vance win because the GOP has made so many mistakes. And I agree. I'm not a Newsom supporter, but I think it makes sense that they are punished for their blatant lying. And, you know, Newsom, although maybe saying this for a populist movement, he's saying some things that I agree with. He's saying that Israel is an apartheid state and he doesn't seem to be in agreement with this war. So I will unite on that and support you there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my playbook, though, I do want a Republican to win in 28. I just don't want it to be J.D. Vance or anyone from the admin. Kind of the structure of it for me, very simply, is I want Democrats to win in 26 for the only reason being that they are going to slow down the administration because the administration's out of control. You know, they're at war with Iran. I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility they drop a nuke on Iran or, you know, something crazy like that, boots on the ground. And so I want that to stop. I want the Epstein files delivered and, you know, all this other stuff. There's also just a lot of stealing. There's a lot of embezzlement, a lot of corruption inside this government. Kristi Noem was basically fired because that is going to become a big problem. There was a big thing in The Wall Street Journal about how, I don't know what exactly it is, but there was some $200 million payment and she's involved with one of the contractors that's going to be building the wall, something like that. And I think that he let her go because that's going to be maybe an issue if the Democrats have oversight. So I want the Democrats in purely because they're going to grind this admin to a halt. In 28, though, the goal is I want Vance and Hegseth and anybody that's in the admin to go down with the ship so they can't win. And I want a Republican to win, but a good one.
And the distinction that I want to make is the difference between people like Hegseth and Trump. I saw you talked about how I spoke about the pastor putting his hands on Trump and they're all kind of praying on him. And I think that the evangelical Christians that are saying the Bible says God must bless those who bless the state of Israel, it makes no sense. And I don't see that as any part of Christianity. And, you know, I come from a Catholic background. I grew up Catholic. And it seems like the Catholics and Orthodox understand that rebuilding the Third Temple is not a part of Christianity. I saw Tucker do a really good deep dive on the Chabad sect of Judaism and what this war could potentially really be about. And so there's a clear separation that I think needs to be made between Catholic Christians, Orthodox Christians, and these warmongering evangelicals. I'm sure you've seen the report of soldiers that were told, and they're complaining, that Hegseth was saying Jesus was anointing Trump and shining a light on him to protect Israel and to bomb Iran. So they're trying to turn this into some Armageddon holy war. Hegseth has these crusade tattoos on him. He has the Kafir tattoo, which we believe is going to be written on the forehead of the Antichrist. Hegseth is not like, or anything that he's doing is not Christ-like at all.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my only issue is I see Judaism and Jews as the source of evangelical Protestantism, or not even, you could get into that. You could go into like where that comes from, the Masoretic texts and things like that. But I mean, in terms of the dispensationalist theology, this whole idea that those that bless Israel will be blessed, I look at that as basically an outgrowth of organized Jewry. And so I guess I just don't like when it always goes back to, you know, Muslims versus Christians. They say Muslims are backward, but Christians are backward too. They say Muslims do this, but Christians do it too. You know, Christians are decadent and degenerate. Muslims are holy. And if it's going to be Goyim Unite, then we got to train the target on Israel, because they really are the ones, obviously, they're using the Christians to bomb the Muslims. And the more that we lean into the antagonism between Christians and Muslims, the more we play into that. So, yeah. That, you know, especially since I know before the war in Iran started, you know, there was a little bit more contentiousness, but especially since the war in Iran started, we have to really make a concerted effort not to get caught up in that. Because like in New York, I'm sure you saw that Jake Lang guy, that Jewish guy, yeah, is out there antagonizing everybody, saying, oh, Muslims are goat fuckers and blah, blah, blah. And someone threw a nail bomb at him. And obviously, you know, Muslims maybe are prone to do things like that or whatever. But it's like that he's inciting that and antagonizing them to get that response because he's a Jew. He wants Christians and Muslims to fight. He wants to provoke an attack, some kind of racially charged incident, so that there is maybe more public support for boots on the ground in Iran. And so people like you and I have to come together and say, no, nobody wants this war, not Muslims, not Christians. It almost needs to be a little bit, you could say, even irrational. Like we have to really strive to overcome. Because like I said, even just now, it's like, did maybe some punk like counter-protester try to attack this guy? I think that's possible, but you almost have to say like, okay, but they're playing, that guy is playing into their hands. Both Jake Lang and the guy that made the nail bomb, they're both playing into this thing. And people like you and I have to really make an effort to resist that and overcome that, even if it's a little irrational.
Yeah, staying away from that division. And I mean, there's an equal possibility that this was a setup, that this was part of the plan, that maybe this was somebody hired. But also blaming this guy if he was throwing a nail bomb on all Muslims is as ridiculous as blaming Pete Hegseth's warmongering hatred on all Christians, right? Because Protestant Christians dominate America. They are the majority sect of Christianity in America. And these evangelicals are the ones that dominate the White House and dominate DC right now. It's not Catholics and Protestants. The majority of people around Trump, they are with these pastors, and the same pastor putting his hand on Trump, she's the one saying, the angels are coming, the angels are coming. This stuff is, it's completely ridiculous. And my point is that they're using Christianity, and it's false Christianity. They're using it to justify this war. So I want to see a complete separation, the same way that if there's a guy throwing a nail bomb, this is not representative of Islam.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I suppose it isn't.
Okay. But you see what I'm saying? But I mean, look, so if this nail bomb is representative of Islam, then why can't we say, and I don't think it's true, why can't we say, look, if America's a majority Christian country, majority is Protestant, majority is evangelical.
And but see, we're doing it. They got us doing it. Now we're doing it.
My point is that we shouldn't use these as examples to attack the entire religion. It's not representative of what it is.
Okay, I'm not doing that. But see, now we're doing it. Why are we talking about this now and not? Let's just say all we need to say about it is this. This incident was a deliberate provocation. A Jew pretending to be a Christian. Maybe the guy's a Muslim. We don't even know who he is. I'm willing to believe he's not a Muslim, let's say. But he's clearly some kind of partisan or an operative. Either way, these two people, there's almost a symbiotic relationship between, even if it is a Muslim who is whipped up by the moment, angry, low IQ, whatever, a guy that would do something like that, he is becoming an unwitting pawn in the game. A Jew pretending to be a Christian, antagonizing some Muslim who's maybe a punk or whatever, or an operative. And they together are creating an incident that will galvanize everybody, because it's like, look, the Jewish guy, Jake Lang, he goes into New York, you know, trying to offend Muslims. And the Muslims are saying, hey, what the F? This is outrageous. This is, he brought it to Zohran Mamdani. He did a pig roast outside of Zohran Mamdani's mansion. And Muslims are saying, well, we're being provoked. We're angry. Surely many of them see what's going on. Maybe some of them don't. And the same is happening with Christians. This guy's going and provoking, and a lot of Christians say, this guy's deliberately antagonizing Muslims. He's trying to incite violence. There's a lot of Christians that don't know, and they say, oh, yeah, let's stick it to him. Oh, look, a Muslim did a nail bomb attack. That's so whatever. So people like you and I, like I said, we just have to really make an effort to isolate the problem makers and say, look, what we don't want, we are in a war with Iran. Forget about these protests and counter-protests, a scuffle in New York. We're at war with Iran. This is apocalyptic. Everybody needs to be really just focused on that. That's sort of my point.
Yeah, the main focus needs to be on the overwhelming Israeli control, right? The Jewish supremacists that have convinced Trump that, you know, Jesus anointed him with a light, Hegseth in the holy war, and, you know, Ted Cruz, that interview with Tucker was so telling, you know, citing this. And even that verse can be misinterpreted. People are saying that he's not actually saying Israel, he's saying it was the son of Abraham, but they're using that semantic error or misunderstanding to say that, oh, it's actually the state of Israel that was founded in 1948 by the Rothschild family. That I want to see more people call that out, because that's the justification they're using for this war. And I saw there was a lot of outrage, and of course we have a disagreement about the Times Square prayer, but that is a clear example of how people get whipped up and angry about something so insignificant, right? 200 people praying in Times Square. The next day, Jews take over Times Square and they broadcast all over the TV stations. They're doing a Mashiach now. They're doing a rave party, jumping up and down with far more people, far more police. Even in Lakewood, New Jersey, they have their own police. They have their own hospitals. A good example is how angry they got about Somali daycares. And you see Tyler Oliveira gets banned on Patreon for exposing a scam that is much bigger, right? So I see all this outrage on Times Square prayer, but almost no talk about the Antichrist celebration. Because what we agree upon, Catholic Christians, Orthodox Christians, is that the Antichrist is the Dajjal. We have an agreement that Jesus is the Messiah, that Jesus will return. And so many of these people have manipulated and changed it and directed the outrage onto Muslims and getting people whipped up about, you know, the Islamic takeover of America, even though it's like, what, Muslims are 1% of the population, this is a, you know, a clear tactic to dehumanize Muslims so that when bombs do drop on Tehran, they killed 170 schoolgirls, they reported 1,000 civilian casualties in Tehran. It's so that Americans see this and they think it's something that's cool, like a Call of Duty game. I'm sure you've seen the White House edits where they're playing like football tackles and then a bomb. They're hitting a baseball and then a bomb's going off. This is tricking so many boomer Americans, and no disrespect, a lot of them probably do go to those Erica Kirk, Kenneth Copeland type megachurch celebrations where even another Trump pastor with the giant sign that says Epic Fury behind him, and they're thinking that this is part of a greater holy cause. So I want people to stop falling for the obvious rage bait directed on Muslims when we should understand who is actually taking over our country.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And it's almost surreal to see how much the anti-Muslim thing is now at the fore, because it went away for a long time. I remember that when Trump got elected the first time in 17, or got inaugurated, ISIS took over the Middle East, and there were ISIS terror attacks in the United States and Europe. And so Islam was very much at the center of the conversation. And then, almost mysteriously, it disappeared. ISIS just like vanished into thin air. It seemed like for 4 years they were unstoppable and there were terror attacks all the time. And then almost overnight, it's like a switch was flipped. Then there was no more terrorism. And then that issue faded into the background and we became preoccupied with Russia and China and the pandemic and BLM and immigration, basically every other issue. And then basically right on schedule, it's amazing how this happens, after October 7th, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, Islam is taking over America. Oh, Muslim terrorists. I saw today, my old colleague, now enemy, Patrick Casey, he did this video about how Tucker Carlson is smuggling Islam into right-wing conservatism. Now, for context, this is a guy who I knew many years ago who was like a white nationalist. And he was a so-called dissident right winger, far right activist, whatever you want to say. And we would have looked at that kind of rhetoric as propaganda. We would say, oh, no one's trying to smuggle Islam into the right wing. We would say that's Jewish propaganda. We would say that they're obviously trying to create this, they're fear-mongering and create this spook so that it would generate anti-Iranian, anti-Hamas, whatever the particular enemy is, it would gin up support for war. And now to see basically all the dissident right wingers kind of taking the bait on this, they're all doing it. And they're now saying, oh yeah, it's Islam. They all sound like Laura Loomer. They all sound like Mark Levin. And, you know, I've said it on my show as a Catholic and as a American nationalist, I don't think America's a Muslim nation. I don't want tons of Muslims to live here. Those are my views. At the same time, you also recognize that that's actually not the biggest problem. The big problem, as we've talked about with immigration, it's coming from Latin America and Asia. Yeah. That's the illegal immigration. That's illegal immigration. The Muslim immigration is mostly refugees from the wars, which, and then, you know, beyond that, it's like, what's a bigger problem than immigration? That we are being sent to kill and die on behalf of a foreign country. I think that sovereignty is actually the number one issue. So as long as we can achieve understanding on that basis, we don't need to, like, obviously there's a discourse between Christians and Muslims, and we don't agree on everything. And there is some friction and some tension there. We don't need to be best good friends on that basis, but we can have understanding that we're being played and that we both actually have a larger opponent.
I agree completely. And I do think that Catholics and Orthodox Christians have far more in common with Muslims than they do with this evangelical sect that seems to think that war is necessary and war is holy and part of this bigger issue. I would want to see more of a distinction there between so many of the good Christians that are, because, you know, Gen Z Americans, and you deserve a lot of credit for this, right, there's been a big awakening. Far more people in Gen Z, they're not drinking alcohol. And also there's a big return to the church, which I think is good. You see, I publicly backed James Fishback. He's a Catholic. You know, he has a very strong Gen Z support. But what he's losing is the boomers. You know, the boomers are still eating up that goy slot propaganda about, you know, how Muslims are evil and they attend mega church. But predominantly from Gen Z, the youth, they see straight up what's going on and they're not falling victim to it. So again, I don't know if you agree, but I think, you know, people like Hegseth, they have far more in common with Jews, and people like you, I think Catholics and Orthodox Christians have far more in common with Muslims.
Well, I mean, we're the thing is, at the end of the day, we are three distinct religions, Jews, yeah. Christians, Muslims, and, you know, I want America to be a Christian country. So it's not necessarily,
that, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's more that at this point in time, we almost need like a ceasefire, basically, because we are in a state of conflict. Like Muslims and Christians are in a ceaseless state of conflict because they're two competing claims. And we can't pretend that's not the case. I mean, if Muslims take over a country, like let's say for the sake of argument that Muslims outnumber Christians, they're going to want Sharia law and they're going to want non-Christians to pay a tax. And if Christians take over a country, like if we're in control of America or whatever, Christians are not going to take a shine to a Muslim call to prayer in the middle of a town because we're going to say that's not the correct religion. So it doesn't help to paper over the differences and say, hey, it's all fine. We're all, because eventually something's got to give. It's just that for right now, in this particular time, specifically right now in this war with Iran, we almost just need like a truce and a ceasefire to say, look, like we can resume the dawah versus the evangelizing another day, because right now these people are trying to rebuild the Third Temple by blowing up the Dome on the Rock and destroying Iran and getting everybody out of Gaza. And that's going to fuck with everybody, because where are the Gazans going to go? Where are the Iranians going to go? They're going to go Europe here. That's not something we don't want. And they want to stay there. That's something that as Muslims, they want. And so that's sort of the framework that we need. It's very important, because if we kind of have a shoddy framework where we say, oh, Christians and Muslims have all these things in common and Muslims are great and Christians are great. Like, you can't really say Christians are the best because you're Muslim, and I can't really say, you know, Islam is fine because I'm Christian. But what we can say is right now the biggest threat to both of us is not each other. So yeah. If we're sober-minded about that, it will be easier, I think, to work together.
Right. And that's part of the eschatology. There's videos of rabbis saying that they need to have Christians and Muslims at war to destroy Europe so that they can take over the world. And I should probably cut YouTube here. YouTube, I'm going to end. Come on over to kick.com/Sneeko. It's the link right there in the chat. Okay, came over just now. You don't watch on YouTube, right? You just stay on my Kick stream?
Yeah, just Kick.
Yeah, so that's part of the strategy. And we've seen this time and time again where people in Europe, they're upset. They're like, oh, the Muslim immigration, even though you're right, it mostly comes in America and Canada, it's mostly from India. The H-1B visas that Trump has not, it seems to, they brag about the immigration restrictions, but H-1B visas have been issued out a lot more. And it's not coming in from the Muslim world. But when it comes into Europe, and this kind of blends in with the white nationalist Christian first movement, they blame the Muslims, but it's like the war is the reason for that. So you can't publicly back war, and you've been great about not publicly backing it like so many others. Asmongold is extremely happy about this war, and then also complain about the results that happen. So you bomb a country, people need somewhere to live, but if you supported the war, you cannot also blame the people that now have no place to be.
Yeah, well, and what's funny about it is you see these people like you're talking about, not even just Asmongold, but I even think about people in the administration, and they're trying to do this like it's almost like a George W. Bush era jingoism where they're saying, like, war is cool. Like, if you're not on board with the war, you're a pussy. And it's like the Freedom Fries thing. Spain isn't supporting this. Yep. So Trump goes, we're not doing trade with Spain. Spain's our actual ally. They're an actual Catholic country. They are very left wing. However, that's our civilization. And there's some rich irony there that the same administration that says, it's Columbus Day, damn it, it's not indigenous, but it's Columbus, then we're going to embargo Spain because they don't support our war against Iran. But they're trying to do that. They're trying to recreate that kind of, you know, in the name of the red, white, and blue kind of thing. And then you go, okay, but what happens every single time we go to war? They come here. We fight them over there so we don't have to fight them over here, but then we're going to bring them all here anyway. Syrian refugees, Afghan refugees, Iraqis, whatever. And I notice a lot of these people in the admin, they go, yeah, well, we're just not going to do that. We're going to bomb Iran. We're going to bomb Gaza, and we're just not going to let them in. It's like you don't really have a choice. They're one, they do it all the time. And two, it's not really up to you. Stephen Miller, at the end of the day, has no control over what happens in the long term. This happens every time. It's like, I'll give you a perfect example. When Trump was in power in the first term, he had John Bolton as the national security advisor, and they had this maximum pressure campaign against Venezuela. And they shut down all the oil. They wouldn't let him sell oil. And that's when Venezuela got really bad. That's when everybody was eating rats and they were starving. And in that time, 6 to 8 million people left Venezuela. Many of them came here. In Trump's last week in office, he gave them temporary protected status. He said any Venezuelan that comes to America will not be deported. They will be shielded from deportation. The last week in office, Biden gets elected, and what does he do? He brings in 4 or 5 million Venezuelan refugees. And so all these Republicans, it's just like deja vu. It's like we go to war and we go, no, but we won't let any refugees in this time. They lose the election, a Democrat comes in, and they bring in all the refugees. And you go, what the fuck happened? Then they go, well, vote for us. We'll build a wall. We're going to send them all back. We get another war. We're not going to take refugees. Democrat comes in. So it's just like we have to get out of the cycle here. And that's my thing. It's like people just got to see that this is the pattern of history and try to break out of it.
That's why I keep reiterating this year, although I put God first and that geopolitically, I am America first, right? You mentioned earlier about Sharia law, but the idea of the Constitution, freedom of religion, free speech, this stuff, it really does not overlap with Sharia law at all. So Sharia law is not consistent with the core American values that the founding fathers wanted. So, and I love this country. I love America. And you brought it up perfectly. Like, you know, I am an artist. I want to make the movies and stuff. It's not compatible with the, you know, really hardcore fundamentalist Islam. So this is why I prioritize this country and why I'm trying to fight for it. You know, Shapiro, Ben Shapiro, your best friend and, well, enemy for so many years, is pushing what you brought up, this idea that it's a left-right issue. It's like, oh, these liberals don't want war. Oh, the libs mad. You see the MAGA movement, they're saying, they're posting videos of Iranians stripping naked in the West and immediately getting naked on Instagram to celebrate Iran being free, even though they're getting bombed so much. And they're like, oh, these liberals are going to be so mad about this. And then you're like, wait, but this is the conservative right, right? So why are they the ones parading around the fact that women from Iran no longer are covering themselves up and dressing modestly? Now they're free to open up an OnlyFans. This is who is supporting the regime change from Epstein Empire and, you know, supporting their own country being bombed. Them turning it into a left-right issue is part of that slop and why I separate from that, because I don't want to be boxed in and let people think that being it's anti-war or pro-war. You know, it's just really, it's not right and left, it's right and wrong. This war is wrong. It's not a partisan issue.
I agree with that. I would say, though, I still think there's value in right and left. I just think we need a realignment. I'm very interested in a political realignment where we say, like, we want the right wing to be the party of, for the Republican Party, whatever. We want it to be the party of a certain set or suite of policy ideas versus the left. And so that's why I'm interested, for example, in voting Democrat in 26 and then coming back to the Republican Party in 28 to see if we can get a candidate that will almost shadow what we did in 26 or even in 24 for that matter. In other words, we want to send a message to the GOP that, like, if the right wing is going to be pro-Israel in favor of regime change, then we will not be a part of that grouping, you know? And so I just want to change what that grouping looks like, because on the left, unfortunately, there is a left wing in America. And I think that you and I fundamentally are against the left in America. Like, I'll give you an example with Zohran Mamdani. Yeah, I know he's Muslim and you like that, and he's America first, and or in a way,
he
said that on the stage.
He is America first.
In some ways. But at the same time, he's also out there like being pro-trans. And he's also out there saying maybe we need to tax white neighborhoods to give more benefits.
Bad.
Like, these are things that I fundamentally oppose.
Yeah.
It's just that if we could get an actually nationalistic right-wing Republican Party, then what is the left going to be left with? They're going to be left with mass migration, trannyism. And so I basically want to keep those issues, or I guess at this point, reclaim those issues for the right wing. Because that was what Trump tried to do. Trump tried to create a political realignment in 2016 where he said now the GOP is going to be the party of anti-war. The GOP is going to be the party, or at least anti-neocon. We're going to be the party of the working class. We're going to bring the jobs back with protectionism and tariffs. And we'll also be anti-immigration. That is the mix that I like. The problem is Trump has backslid, and now Trump is virtually indistinguishable from the old GOP. Now we don't have the tariffs. We have a form of mass migration with H-1Bs and student visas. We have a war in Iran. We have this policing anti-Semitism, weird evangelical stuff. It's like Trumpism is dead now. So I'm interested in bringing that back. I think that right and left is useful. It's just that it needs to be realigned. It needs to be altered a little bit.
I agree. And there's another separation where you made a very valid point that you think that Iran would lose because of the Westerners infiltrating. Right. And a good example is that everyone that the MAGA movement is parading around, these traitors that are celebrating their country being bombed, they are programmed, obviously, with what you said was Western values, if I'm not mistaken. I want to discredit that. But the strengths that Iran has is the religiosity, is how they band together, this concept of martyrdom, fighting for the truth. It's bigger than nationalism. It's something that's core to their entire way of life, that this is a greater battle. And a lot of them were definitely awakened after the assassination of Khomeini, right? This follows into that line of thinking. And you said that their downfall would be the traitors from within. It could be the Kurds. It could be the people from the southeast, the different ethnicities in these groups being brainwashed by what they see on TikTok and Instagram about how they need to be liberated from the restrictions of the burqa, that they would be the ones to fight the Ayatollah, fight that stronghold of religiosity from within. And so what you indirectly said was that the Western values, that American values, even though that's not core American values, but what it is right now, and even the propaganda that they're spreading, it's bombing Muslims, it's, you know, war is cool because it's a Call of Duty game, epic fury and liberation of women, they should get naked in the streets. And you also accurately pointed out that this is why China restricts that media coming in from the West, because they don't want the trannyism to infiltrate and program and make their people weak. Right, there's a testosterone problem in our country. People are having less children. A lot of times they have more dogs than they even have, you know, single, or they have nuclear families with children. This is a clear problem. But the distinction, like when I say this, a lot of people say, they say like, oh, you hate America. You hate it. No, I love America. I love what the founding fathers were about. I love these core values, but it's been subverted so much that what can you even define American values as now? If you look at the White House page, it's football goy slop and bombing Muslims. It's the women opening up OnlyFans because they got freed from the Ayatollah. So I think that the difference is, and obviously, you know, the brown clown idea has been in circulation a lot. When I say it, it's like, okay, you hate America, but no, I see the problems and I want to fix them. And like you said, I think there should be a new right and there should be a new focus on what our core values are.
Well, I think that the reason it comes across a different way is because it always goes hand in hand with the promotion of Islam. It's always like, well, the West is degenerate. Islam is holy. The West is hypocritical. Islam, they don't play this way. And we got to be honest that the Muslim world has a lot of the same problems. You know, Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, what do you think their elites are doing? I mean, are their elites praying five times a day? Are they, I mean, they're drinking, they're smoking, they're doing all the same stuff we are. They have been corrupted by the same forces that our society has. Our elites are not meaningfully Christian. I would say that in some of the biggest Muslim countries, their elites aren't meaningfully Muslim.
That's fair.
And so I guess it always comes down to this, like, it's always this comparison. The West is decadent and degenerate. Islam is holy. The West always fights each other. Islam doesn't. And there just should be maybe, one, some recognition that, you know, the Muslim world has many of the same. There's a lot of division there. There's a lot of infighting and there's a lot of hypocrisy. It should just be something like, you know, let the West be the West. If you want to critique the West, say the West should return to its illiberal roots, because the, you know,
I agree.
You also identify Westernism with liberalism, and that's not really wrong per se. But the West does have an illiberal tradition. You do have Catholicism. You do have reactionary politics in the 19th and 20th century. And so I guess people don't like this idea that everyone's now going to convert to Islam. That's the only reactionary force in the world. It's Western liberalism versus illiberal Islam. And we all got to be like your buddies. I'm not going to say who, but it's like, we're sick of the West. So now we're going to join up with these other guys. Because for me, when I say I'm against the decadence of the West, I'm saying we need to get smarter as the West, like we used to be, stronger like the West used to be. We need to put ourselves first. We need to be a little bit more protective of our culture. We need to be a little bit less open to the outside world, less tolerant. And we do need to reassert the religious core, which would be Catholicism, not Islam. So that's where it maybe rubs me the wrong way, is it's always, you guys suck, we're great. You guys are evil. We're these wholesome chungus guys just trying to pray and everything. Mm. And it's like, okay, well, I don't want to get my whole civilization shit on. That's where I think people get defensive.
I want to ask you a question about the liberalism. I think Mossad attacked and the voice is messed. Let me call you right back. One second.
Oh, okay.
All right. What happened? Thanks for the sub, Warner. Well, let me call him right back. Is the voice still messed up? Let me see. Can you guys hear? Is it still?
Sub Warner. Well, let me call him right back. It
sounds fine now. It's fine? Okay. I think we're fine now. Let's check. Can you tell me if the voice is better?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
You can hear me. I just want to see if they... Yeah, they've been throttling. I saw... Did you see us get... Did you see our both of our Wi-Fi got attacked at the same time the other day?
I did. Yeah, that was crazy.
And Suleiman as well. He all got hit at the same exact time. There could be some sort of throttling there. So you said earlier, it's good. Okay. You said that it can be described as liberalism. So, you know, I did endorse you back in 2023, Fuentes Rally 2. I said Christ is king, which I still do. You know, I got a lot of criticism from that, but I do believe that in a sense. It's like, because Jesus will return. Jesus is the true Messiah. There's not the false Messiah. I don't believe in the Mashiach. Jesus will come and correct a lot of these people, and I look forward to it. And we believe that he's a prophet. We revere him. We believe in the Virgin Mary. And so I still want to be able to say Christ is king the way I did at Fuentes Rally 2. I'm in a Groiper group chat, and they're like, that was the most aura you ever had. You know, I talk to them all the time. So what is your goal to shift? So how would you define Westernism with liberalism? And how do you see the return to Catholicism and tradition in America, which I think is objectively good for this country?
Well, it's sort of a complicated topic because, you know, we as Catholics, we do believe that political liberalism is an error. It's literally part of the syllabus of errors. Reason and rationality. We believe in natural rights. And so there's aspects of it that that the non-Western civilizations do not have that we want to keep.
Do you mind repeating that point that they throttled it? It's fixed now. Do you mind? Sorry about the tech issues. Do you mind repeating that?
What is it? Is it your Kickstream or is it Discord?
I think it's the kick. We're fine now, but someone's trying to hit my Wi-Fi. It's the same Mossad attack.
Damn. You can hear me though, right?
Yeah, no, you're fine. Can't? Yeah, you're fine. You're fine.
Okay. Well, I said, do you want me to repeat the whole thing?
Yeah, do you mind?
That's crazy. Dude, the Mossad is after us. What is this? Hey, worry about your war in Iran, for fuck's sake. We're just trying to have a stream. Am I good?
No, you're good. You're all good. You're all good.
Okay. So, here's the thing. Like I said, liberalism is, according to Catholics, an error. It is part of our syllabus of errors. We don't support it. It is also difficult because you have to think practically in terms of what is possible in Western civilization. And I do, at least in the United States of America, I do believe that it's baked into our system. I don't know that you're going to get a radical fundamental change. I don't know that America is going to become a confessional state. It's going to become like a Catholic. We're going to have like Catholic law and things like that. I'm not so sure about that. What I am interested, though, simply is promoting Christianity. I'm interested in promoting the gospel. I'm interested in promoting a kind of civilizational core. We are, I think, for the foreseeable future, going to have diversity. But we do want from the state a recognition that it's a Christian civilization, that Jesus is our God. We want to be a nation under God. Like, we want Christianity to be in the schools. We want prayer in the schools. We want the degeneracy not to be promoted by the government. Like, for example, Trump tweeted the other day, we're going to let children get castrated if their parents consent. It's like, no, like, we're not going to do that because men are men and women are women. That's in the Bible. You know, we're not going to have a civilization where marriage is between anybody and everybody, where there's gays and polycules and transgenders and all that kind of stuff. We do just want to get to a level of civil society where there's some recognition that we're created beings. There's some recognition that we have a Christian heritage. That's kind of my goal, because I do recognize, like I said, at this point, it's a little late in the game. A lot of people believe in, we are going to be a white ethno state and we're going to deport everybody. And it's going to be, there has to be some recognition of the reality that ship has basically sailed. And maybe there was a chance we could have turned that back 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I think that ship has sort of sailed. We went from a republic to an empire. Now we got to be an empire. And I think that as an empire, in the old days, you could maybe get away with saying, oh, we don't have an official language. We don't have an official religion. Well, you want to know why that was? Because everybody spoke fucking English and everybody, for the most part, was Christian. Now that we are an empire and that's not the case, maybe you do need an explicit recognition. Hey, we are a Christian country. We do speak English. And yeah, there's going to be other people in here. And as long as they defer to that on some level, as long as there's some primacy for that, we can tolerate that they can have their space over here and that maybe there can be an enclave here and there. My biggest concern, though, like I said, is the sovereignty issue. We're an empire. These things have happened. They're not going to be undone. And if they are, not easily and not overnight. And so in the short term, I just want to see Americans get back in control over our own destiny. That's really the goal. A lot of people say, so you want women not to be able to vote. It's like, ideally, no, we don't want women to vote. However, you know, is that going to happen anytime soon? No. How is that going to happen? It seems totally impractical. So I think those are things that are frequently used to trip us up. I think maybe first and foremost, the imperative is we just have to have Americans in the driver's seat that are actually citizens, that are loyal to this country. Can we start with, like, not dual citizens? Can we start with getting Randy Fine out of Congress? Then we can maybe take it further. But that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, this guy needs to go. And again, he's always pushing out, like, how, oh, Muslims come in, they don't try to assimilate. And you look at Lakewood, New Jersey, and they have their own language. The parents are telling the kids not to go interact with the Goyim. They have their own hospitals, their own schools. And this is an enclave in Jersey that nobody is talking about. And they're taking so much tax money. They're registering their houses as synagogues. They don't seem to want to assimilate at all. In fact, it's almost like a mini Israel there. And I want to ask you about, so let's go to the war a little bit. So the justification for this war is they keep saying that Khomeini killed 30,000 protesters. This has become the 6 million in the Holocaust is the 30,000 protesters, even though the director under front, the CIA director in Trump's first administration, Mike Pompeo, said himself that these protests were infiltrated by CIA Mossad. What do you think is the actual pretext for this war? Is this true? What could we actually, you know, because we haven't seen any of the bodies. We haven't seen any real reports. All we just keep hearing this 30,000 number. Is this true?
Totally fake. And I think that history will show that what happened in January was some kind of Kurdish CIA Mossad operation. And I said that in January. There was a report, I think it was Financial Times. They said that eyewitness accounts reported that it was people dressed in all black with automatic weapons taking over the government buildings in Western Iran. And those are the provinces in Iran that are majority Kurdish. Now, when the United States evacuated its troops in Iraq, they didn't take them out of Iraq altogether. The U.S. base is in Baghdad, I believe. And in preparation for the war to get the troops out of harm's way, they said, we're withdrawing from Iraq. And I remember reading that report and I thought, oh, really? The war in Iraq is over? No. They didn't come out of Iraq. They went to Iraqi Kurdistan. They went to Erbil, which is the capital of Iraqi Kurdistan. Now, why did they do that? Because the rest of Iraq is under the umbrella of the Popular Mobilization Force, which is the Shiite militias that are involved with Iran. So in every other governorate in Iraq, except for Iraqi Kurdistan, you've got the PMF. You've got forces loyal to Iran. And that's why in Mosul, you have the PMF and the Shiites protesting and rising up. In other governorates, it's the same story. In Baghdad, it's the same story. So they went up to northern Iraq. Now, in January, there were protests all across Iran, but where they were the worst, where actually government buildings were being taken over and claimed in the name of the protesters, it was all the Kurdish majority areas. So I suspect that what happened is that Netanyahu and Trump, they were involved in northern Iraq, where, again, the U.S. has a presence there, and the Israelis, they're also involved there as well, maybe even in Azerbaijan as well on Iran's northern border. Israel's got a very close relationship with the Azeris, or the Azerbaijanis. They were involved up there. I'm sure they sent forces across the border, and they were trying to instigate a popular uprising where they had the numeric strength. They also did the same thing in Balochistan. In Balochistan and southeastern Iran, there are a few separatist groups that have been responsible or claimed responsibility for terrorist attacks in Iran, notably exactly 2 years ago. I think it was in January 2024 or 2025, one or the other. It was on the anniversary of Qasem Soleimani's death. there were two huge terrorist attacks at the site of his grave. And I think it was a few dozen people were killed. And of course, everybody initially blamed it on Israel. The Iranian government said, no, it was Jaish al-Adl, which is a Baloch separatist group. They also have deep security ties with the Israelis going back 15, 20 years. So, and going back to our previous conversation, these are the types of groups that the Israelis and the Americans are going to use to try to overthrow the government and create instability. The real pretext for the war, obviously, it's not the dead protesters. That number is exaggerated. And in my opinion, what Iran is doing, it's not like they're just killing protesters, waving signs and making their voices heard. They're shooting operatives that are trying to kill the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and overthrow the regime. Like, so that's a very different thing. The real pretext for the war, it goes back 50 years, as you know.
Yeah.
Israel has this plan to basically destroy every country in the Middle East. Iran is the last on the list. And October 7th is what kicked off this once and for all march to a showdown with Iran. And so first Israel ripped apart Hamas. Then they ripped apart Hezbollah systematically. Then they got Assad out of Syria. And then the IRGC was expelled from that country so that Hezbollah could not be rearmed. Then they had the United States degrade and bomb Iran, go after its nuclear facilities. And now what you're seeing is basically the beginning of the end of this 50-year campaign, this two-year campaign to confront and overthrow Iran. And that is what it has always been about. Everything else, nukes, protesters, the Kurds, the Yazidis, the genocide, all that other stuff is just a pretext. All that other stuff is just a big fat excuse to do what Israel always wanted to do, which is annihilate anyone that rivals their interests in the region.
Yeah, you had a really good breakdown with the map open. There's that, you know, that 25-minute clip talking about Iraq, Syria, Libya, how they, every single neighboring country, all the enemies with targets at Israel have been completely destabilized. And Iran's the last one. So you got it completely right. I saw that you think that U.S. right now is winning this conflict. It's going back and forth. There's no end in sight. They haven't said when this will be over. They can't give us a date. Trump did say 2 weeks to stop the spread in 2020. So it sounds like we had a PTSD. And now there's more talk. And it seems like it's inevitable that troops will be deployed. There's going to be some boots on the ground in Iran. When can we expect this to finish? And is the U.S. actually winning like Trump and Fox News are bragging about?
I have no idea where it goes from here, honestly. It's very hard to predict. But here's what we do know. What we know, there's been some new developments. First, I'll say this. In the opening phase of the war, it looked as though the United States was winning. That was apparent because the United States killed the Supreme Leader and I think conducted 1,800 airstrikes. In the first 24 hours, I think it was 1,300 airstrikes. Now it's almost 2,000. So there has been very little in the way of a response from Iran. Iran has not killed very many people. They haven't successfully destroyed any strategic assets from America. What the U.S. imperative was getting into the war is that they needed a quick and easy win. And the reason being is because if it turns into an attritional war, the advantage is with Iran. And that just has to do with the physics of intercepting ballistic missiles and the economics of making interceptors and ballistic missiles, which maybe everybody's familiar with. But long story short, it's cheaper to make a ballistic missile than to shoot one down. Iran makes more ballistic missiles than we make the interceptors that shoot them down. And the rate of interception is about 20%. So we got to make five times as many of these expensive weapons that we don't even really make a lot of them versus Iran, which is a missile factory, and it's very cheap and it's very easy to launch them. So for economic reasons, this cannot go on for weeks and weeks, months and months, because if Iran can just launch these missiles, it disrupts shipping in the Strait of Hormuz, which has ripple effects in the global economy. And if they're pounding Israel or also the Gulf states, it's going to grind those economies to a halt, and then those countries will put pressure on the United States. To do what? Well, the answer is escalate. Now, there's been some developments here, which is one, Strait of Hormuz is effectively closed and has been. Even though it seems that these ships are not really being sunk. Iran is not hitting the ships. They will not take the chance crossing the strait because they're not insured. So insurance companies will not insure the cargo because it's very risky. The Development Finance Corporation stepped in and offered to insure them. Even still, the ships aren't going through. And it seems that Trump is frustrated by this. As a result, crude oil is going at almost $100 a barrel. I haven't checked the latest price since last night, but energy prices are spiking. Yeah. All these economies are responding accordingly. China will not export its energy. Japan is talking about opening up their strategic reserves. Particularly affected is countries that rely on natural gas. LNG, which comes out of the Persian Gulf from the Emirates and goes to Europe and goes to other places, that's being affected by this. There was, however, a ceasefire that just broke out, I think, last night. Saudi Arabia, backed by the Europeans, negotiated their own ceasefire with Iran. And actually, to the chagrin of many Iranian hardliners, the Iranian president, Pezeshkian, apologized and said, sorry that we bombed the Gulf countries, and they said they won't target each other anymore. Now, that being said, Iran is still bombing the Gulf countries. Iran is still launching projectiles at Dubai, and the Houthis launched some drones at Saudi's eastern province where the oil is. So I don't know if that's real or if it's overstated, but there's been some talk of a limited ceasefire between these two, between the Gulf, the GCC, and Iran. Now, the administration is saying, we're going to escalate. Trump has said, we're going to bomb Iran really hard. The second phase starts tonight. We're really going to pound them. And Trump also says, and it's been implied, that we're going to deploy a limited ground force to maybe disassemble Iran's nuclear facilities or its ballistic missile launch platforms because, one, in the event that Iran falls apart, that is going to be a huge concern. All this highly enriched uranium, these centrifuges, who will that fall into the hands of? And maybe you create so much chaos in Iran that you can deploy special forces, get them in, get them out, and they disassemble everything. Maybe that was the whole plan. And then number two, here's the other problem. Even though it has been reported that we've destroyed half of Iran's ballistic missile launch platforms and we've hit them 2,000 times and they say we're going to control their airspace in a couple of weeks, Iran still has half of its ballistic missiles. So they still have a huge stockpile and they still have the ability to launch the missiles. And historically, this is tricky. Last year, we bombed Yemen for a whole month, and they were able to launch missiles. And that's this tiny movement in the west coast of Yemen. We could not stop them from launching missiles. Iran is three times the size of Iraq. It's a huge country. They've been preparing for this for 30 years. So it's like, if we can't stop the Houthis from launching missiles, you can't stop the Iranians from launching missiles. They got way more of them, way more territory. And the last thing I will say is that Trump has now changed the conditions for victory. In the opening phase of the war, he said, well, we want an uprising and we want to destroy their missile system. Now he says we want an unconditional surrender,
right?
Which is scary because this is like Japan. This is like Imperial Japan in World War II. Now it's an unconditional surrender. You want Shiite Muslims to unconditionally surrender? How the fuck are you going to get them to do that? You don't want to invade. You're not going to invade. You can't bomb them into submission. You know, so how are you going to get these people to agree to that? We didn't even get Maduro's government to agree to an unconditional surrender. So that scares me. That sounds like nuclear talk. That sounds like we're going to nuke them until they beg for mercy. Now, I'm not saying that's likely, but that makes me nervous. When they say unconditional surrender, that's a very technical term. That's not rhetoric. That's a technical term in war. That means they want an American viceroy to go in and run the new fucking government. The last time we got an unconditional surrender was Japan and Germany. So that scares me a little bit. And ultimately, where does that leave us? Either the Iranian Revolutionary Guard is going to wave the white flag, or this will just simply keep escalating, which means bigger ordnance, more bombs, a ground force. There's another aircraft carrier making its way over, and it's not good. And I don't know that you're going to be able to succeed without a ground invasion or a nuke. That seems like where it's headed.
Yeah, I don't want to keep you too long, but there's a couple things. So if this does escalate to nuclear warfare, Putin has publicly stated and criticized U.S.-Israel for getting involved in this conflict. He will 100% retaliate if the U.S.-Israel regime launches nukes, correct?
Did he say that? I didn't see that.
I don't know if that's public, but they have criticized, and I think we're of the assumption that a lot of those meetings, Putin made it clear that if you use nukes, then we're going to have to respond in some way. Putin does not want U.S. to use nukes on Iran. It's not even just for the principle and for global empire, but because of how much it's going to affect the global economy.
I think it is unlikely that a country would retaliate with nuclear weapons that they don't have a security pact with, which Russia and Iran do not. With that being said, I have the sneaking suspicion, maybe I'm crazy, I have the sneaking suspicion that Trump wants to use one, because everything that Trump is about is legacy. I want to invade Greenland. I want to invade Canada. I want to make the map bigger. We're going to run Venezuela. I'm going to build a new White House next to the old White House. Everything he's doing is about his legacy, his place in history. It's literally like a bucket list thing. Mm-hmm. And he is totally off the rails, totally off the reservation. It's about destruction and recreation in his own image. And I have this hunch that he wants to use a nuke, that he wants to be the one to say, I pressed the button, I did it, I reset the world order. I think there's a temptation there. And I wouldn't have said that in the first term, but based on everything I've seen from him now, and this is just a hunch, that's all it is, it's just a gut feeling. I think for ego reasons, he wants to have said that he did it.
Right.
And I think he wants the history books to say that he did it, that he pressed the button.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate power, literally the ultimate power. So I would never rule that out in this second term. In Iran, that would be the one. How do you reset nonproliferation and everything? Drop another fucking nuke. It's not likely, but I think there's maybe a 10% chance that happens.
Especially with the new statement that it's unconditional surrender. I mean, obviously, we're aware of his arrogance and how much his reputation matters to him and the importance that his legacy will live on. How much do you think is the Epstein files, which is completely coincided with this war, right? The Epstein files partially released, and then Netanyahu visits a couple days later. I think there was a new release of several statements yesterday night where it says, well, there's one file where Epstein's saying that Trump told a porn star that the porn star reminded him of Ivanka. Is this pressure from Mossad? Is this pressure from the Israeli government to get him to fight this war?
It's possible, but I think people lean on that a little bit too much. There are some coincidences, I will say. Like when we bombed Iran the first time. We bombed Iran the first time, and a week before that, Elon Musk said, well, Trump won't release the files because he's in them. And he had a black eye. Remember that?
Yep.
That happened a week before we bombed Iran at Midnight Hammer. Elon was in the Oval Office with a black eye for the last time. Then he goes on Twitter and says, oh, Trump will never release it because he's in the files. Then we go to war with Iran. And we went to war with Iran on June 13th, 613, 613 commandments in the Hebrew Bible, in the Mishnah. Then the war concludes. A month later, Bibi Netanyahu comes to the White House, and the day before he arrives, they bury the Epstein files. Mm. So he comes back, I think, on July 14th, and on the 13th, that's when the DOJ put out the memo that they're never going to look at the Epstein files again. So the war in Iran last year was bookended by these things, which was a little suspicious to me. Now here we are again. Epstein files break out. This one's a little bit less coincidental, but, you know, Netanyahu comes to the White House December 29th. Epstein files come out. Netanyahu returns to the White House in February. We go to war on Purim.
On Purim,
on the
right.
Jewish holiday of
During
Purim.
During Ramadan and Lent, the Persians.
Right.
Jews being saved
but
from Persia.
But more importantly, it commemorates their slaughter of the Iranians, their slaughter of 75,000 Persians after they defeated the Amalekites, you know? So I hesitate to put too much emphasis on things like this, the numerology, the holidays, the Epstein stuff, but It's an element. It's an element. Without evidence, we can't say too much about it. Oh, it's because he's blackmailed. But it's certainly something that I keep, you know, on one side of my mind, I guess.
Yeah, I like your take on that when you did push back on how much the Epstein files were getting schizophrenic with the Spirit cooking and Ball, that bank account name. That is important to remember what Epstein was about. And a lot of this misdirection is meant to confuse people, right? This is why Nicki Minaj was allegedly, or she's probably paid by the MAGA movement to get people to say, oh, it's the Democrats that didn't release it, to get people confused and talking about witchcraft. But there is an element that you almost can't ignore that you have to keep within your analysis of all these world events. Because again, Iran, they burned the Ball statue, several weeks ago? And then look how US-Israel responds by bombing a school, which they said, they're claiming that it's a misfire. But again, you don't really make a mistake like that. And Ball is the god, the demon god the Semites were praying to, that they worship through child sacrifice. And so it looks like they were responding to this by offering, if you're going to burn our God, we're going to go and sacrifice more to him. But again, there's no specific evidence of this, but it is, you know, there are a lot of strange coincidences. Maybe I want to ask you one more about Cuba, because during the midst of all this war, Trump is saying that now Cuba could come next. And if I'm not mistaken, Cuba is not involved in the Rothschild central bank system, similar to Iran, similar to Venezuela. Why Cuba right now? Why this focus on, what does this have to do with everything else going on?
Well, to me, that one's very simple, which is that Rubio is pursuing a reverse domino strategy in the Caribbean. Take out Venezuela, and then Cuba will fall after, and then Nicaragua after that. And then we basically control the entire Western Hemisphere. Bolivia recently elected a pro-American government. Argentina elected a pro-American government. Chile, Ecuador, Peru have pro-American governments. El Salvador has a pro, you know, Bukele has a pro-American government. So even Mexico, Claudia Sheinbaum, I know she's a Jew, she's way more pro-America than Lopez Obrador, who is a far lefty. So what they seek in the Caribbean is take down Venezuela. And Venezuela, it's overstated about the oil. China doesn't get that much oil from Venezuela. Venezuela doesn't make that much oil, and they won't for the near future. However, where the oil makes an outsized impact is in Cuba. Cuba relies on Venezuela for a lot of their energy needs on a daily basis. Now, Trump came in and said no more Venezuelan or Mexican oil for Cuba. And what has happened in Cuba is now they have a very acute energy shortage, and their economy has effectively collapsed in just the past 90 days, 2 months, basically ever since the Maduro regime fell. And so there's protests in Havana. And now I think Trump wants to enter into an agreement with Cuba where we manage them like how we're managing Venezuela. Now, in this limited and narrow sense, I do support it, because there is a U.S.-China competition in the Western Hemisphere, and it's been going on for 15 years, which is that in the beginning of the century, China had effectively no trade with South and Central America. By the 2020s, China is the majority of trade with South and Central America. And not only that, if you have a trade imbalance or a trade deficit, you have to then acquire assets in these countries. And so China is loaning them a lot of money to build deep water ports and to build space facilities. Like in Argentina, there's a very famous one. And what you call this is dual use infrastructure. So China has a lot of ports in the Caribbean, in the Pacific coast of South America. They have a lot of radar dishes and other things, where if they so chose in 10, 15, 20 years, they could convert those into military bases, spying facilities. With modern ports, they actually become like spying facilities. They can monitor the cargo in different ships. They could even use missile launch platforms disguised as shipping containers at those ports. And so I understand people like to engage in these grand conspiracies, but there is a real conflict between Beijing and Washington in the Western Hemisphere. I actually happen to think it is America first to have a hemispheric defense policy where the whole Western Hemisphere is pro-American. However, what I will say in defense of maybe what you have to say about it or other people is, you know, that maybe they let Trump do Venezuela to whet his appetite for Iran. Mm. Because if when Trump talks about Iran, he says, we're going to do the Venezuela model. Yep. We're going to kill the top guy. And then the next guy's going to succeed him. And he's going to do whatever we say. Because that's what worked in Venezuela. And that was so awesome. And we kicked ass and blah, blah. So they definitely got his appetite going with Venezuela and convinced him, well, you could do anything. We could do the same thing in Iran. And then we could do it here. And then we could do it there. So surely that was part of it. Now, by itself, I don't think it's the end of the world, but now that you see it is fed what is happening in Iran, you sort of question, maybe was that the best idea? Maybe, did they give us one so that we could do the other? There's a possibility.
That was my original criticism, because right now I do want to believe, too, that, you know, idea of Monroe Doctrine controlling the Western Hemisphere. But just seeing how much he is controlled by Israel, it's hard to trust anything that he's going to do geopolitically, any involvement he has in other countries. And I don't know if you believe that report, but BRICS did report that $2 to $3 billion of oil was shipped from Venezuela directly to Israel afterwards. Again, that wasn't coming directly from what did you say, that this isn't a trusted source?
Well, Venezuela denies it. Israel didn't confirm it. And Venezuela did trade with Israel in 2020, as recently as 2020. So I think it's maybe a little overstated.
Okay. Last one. I'm not sure how much time you have. I know you're...
I could do one more and then I got to split.
Professor Jang's coming on the show tomorrow and he's recently blown up. I saw your good... I don't know if you're still friends with Keith Woods. I know you guys have back and forth, but he's been very critical. Keith Woods, great guy. I have nothing bad to say about him. He's been very critical and I've seen a lot of people push back and also a lot of people like what he's saying, you know, because he is a high school professor. He's not, I think he has a BA in English, but he's got a lot of this right and he predicted the Iran war almost as accurately, or if not the same amount as you. What do you think about Jang? Is he some allegations that he's CCP, Mossad, or is he just a guy analyzing and trying to connect the dots?
Well, I don't know what he is. What I will say is this. I think that there is such an appetite for anybody that will talk about Israel and Jews that basically anybody that does is all of a sudden seen as credible. I've seen this happen over the past 3 years. Anybody that will talk about it, all of a sudden everybody's on board. But he's not really correct. So I don't know what he is as a guy, but he talks about the Khazarian mafia and the Freemasons and all this other stuff. The eschatology gets a little bit too much into that. And I go, this guy just isn't correct. Like, he doesn't really know what he's talking about. He sounds like he knows what he's talking about, but when you really watch all the content, it's just a lot of conspiracy slop. It's just a lot of schizo bait slop. And we got to be very careful that we are absolutely correct. Not just people that will acknowledge, yes, Israel controls the West. We need to know exactly who they are and what they're about and how they do it. And so once people start to go into, it's all a Jesuit, Khazarian, whatever thing, then I go, yeah, that person's not really credible. They're either ignorant or they are some kind of op. So I'm not a huge fan, honestly.
In defense of my Asian brother, I think a lot of that has been misconstrued. It's not that he is trying to misdirect. I've seen so many of his lectures about eschatology, and he's specific that things like the Freemasons, things like the infiltration of Jews with the Jesuit order, the Khazarians, that it does go back to one thing. He doesn't try to misdirect people. He's saying things like the Freemasons are a subsect, the Illuminati is a subsect, and that Khazarians converted to Judaism, which, I mean, there's speculation, the DNA, it's hard to trace completely, but there was a lot of truth to the fact that when the Khazarian Empire fell, a lot of them did convert to Judaism. But it's not saying that these are the people to blame. The eschatology and the transformation of Judaism to become rabbinical Judaism, where the rabbis are at the top, where you have to go to rabbi court in order to even convert, that this does go back to the same eschatology and the fact that their Messiah is the Antichrist. So he's speaking about secret societies. He's speaking about things people consider to be conspiracy theories, but it's not misdirection. And I think that through clips, I think it could be misinterpreted.
Like I said, I mean, he's, I don't know that he's the worst in the world, but I think it's a lot of conspiracy crap, a lot of schizo crap. And I think that ultimately, the only people that really get it are, one, people like, Catholics, far-right types, because we recognize that it really is the Jews. It really, because that's what it comes down to. The Jews that put Christ on the cross are wayward, And now they're back in the Holy Land trying to undo what was done by Jesus, which is that the veil was split, the temple was destroyed, the Jews were expelled. They're trying to undo that work, piece by piece, return to the land, rebuild the temple, and then they want to have their Antichrist sit on the throne. And what makes it the Antichrist? Well, it's a worldly conquering Messiah. So to try to introduce like, oh, well, they're not real Jews, and oh, well, it's a Mason thing. Oh, well, it's, you know, it's the Frankists or whatever. It's the secret societies. I feel like that gets away from that continuity of this long story. That's why it's the Christians, or even Muslims for that matter, because they recognize Christ as a Messiah, who can maybe see the theological continuity with what happened years ago.
Everything you just said is exactly the same eschatology of within Islam. We believe in the same exact thing. And, you know, it's not to misdirect, but it is true that these groups like the Freemasons and others, these are a subsect. And like even that the deviations are part of it. The Frankists are part of Jacob Frank was a Jew. And so the theory could be that, okay, because Jews are outnumbered, they infiltrate different groups in different countries under the guise of a secret society, really to support the same exact mission, which is to summon their Messiah, which we believe, me and you, is the Antichrist.
Yeah, I just think the Frankist thing is basically fake. I think the Khazar thing is totally fake. It's not that Jacob Frank wasn't real, it's just that he had no impact. You know, the people that are doing this are not Frankists. They're not antinomian. They follow the law. You know, Ben Shapiro is an Orthodox Jew. He's halakhic. He follows Jewish law. Frankism is based on the idea that you have to transgress the law. They're against the law. Chabad Lubavitch, they are also law followers too. So I just disagree, and I think that intentionally or unintentionally, it is misdirection, and that's my issue with it.
Okay. Well, yeah, he's there's some things you like about him too, huh? I'm not trying to keep you here forever. I appreciate you coming on. Nick Fuentes, the Goyper General, a good moment of Goyim uniting for a second in the midst of all this. It's a very tumultuous time. There's a lot of hate, and you know, you have accurately pointed out there's so much slop posted on X. Maybe that's why Elon bought it, you know, the big... You know, he did. It's even funny that tweet where he was criticizing Trump. He said, "Here's the really big bomb." You know, those. I think the wording is very important. Here's the really big bomb. Trump is not releasing the Epstein files because he's in them. You know, so maybe that was, you know, a hint. You know, people like to post about things and tell you what's going to happen before it happens. But in the midst of all this hate, I'm sure you've seen like Loomer is trying to tag the FBI, the DOJ, Tommy Robinson. You know, it was all found over the Epstein files, and there's just a lot more attacks. And I think there's a lot more Mossad infiltration. I think you pointed out correctly that intelligence agencies, their new strategy is not to censor completely. It's to have propped up paid shills and pay Indian bots to get people arguing and hating each other and disrespecting our faith and our people more than they ever have. So your energy is drained and you're not focused on the bigger issue. So I like this moment of solidarity so that we could remember what the bigger goal is right here.
Yeah, me too. Goyim United. Yeah, no, but it was good talking to you. And we just got to stick together, man. It's America first.
It is. It is. So, yeah, if you want to play Fort sometime and all that stuff, just text me. Don't, you know, I don't want him to think that I'm trying to play with, you know. Yeah. Shout out to the Gorpers, man. I talk to them very frequently in that group chat. They're good guys, man. Like Asuka, first class. Well, I don't think he likes me, but I do love the Gorpers.
The Groypers love you. We're going to stick together. We won't let... Nobody's going to get between us.
Yes. Pray. Nobody. No grape. Pray.
No grape. Yeah, no SA. We will not SA you.
Okay. Have a good one, man. Talk soon.
Yeah, see ya.
Peace, Nick.